Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 8th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R. Tucker?
Doing fine. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So, D.R., interesting stories have popped up over the last, on my horizon, shall we say, over the last 2 weeks. I think it's been on other people's horizons for a while. But let me say this. Across the country, there have been a multitude of pipelines proposed to be built. We've had several here in Massachusetts. The Keystone XL was kind of the mother of all pipelines, but there's many others out there. It turns out that there is a proposal to build a pipeline from the Bakken Shale, which I guess is in Montana or someplace, or North Dakota somewhere. Bakken shale fields, where they get natural gas and oil, this sort of sludgy oil you get from tar sands, and they want to carry that in a pipeline down to Illinois, across the Dakotas, across Iowa, I think, and into Illinois. That's all well and good. It turns out that the pipeline, the route of the pipeline will cross the Missouri River near a Sioux Indian reservation. I believe it's the Standing Rock
Sioux tribe.
They have, because the pipeline crosses the sole source of water for the reservation and various other reasons, the Standing Rock Sioux Indian tribe, along with an increasing number of allies, has been fighting this, right? Yeah. And so there's this setup where you've got an Indian tribe standing proudly against bulldozers that are trying to tear up their land. Right? Did you see any of that, DR?
Yes, there was some extraordinary video shot by Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! About a protest that occurred on Saturday, September the 3rd, in which members of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, who don't call themselves protesters, that call themselves water protectors and land protectors, tried to stop the bulldozing on a disputed portion of the pipeline route, bulldozing of what is regarded as sacred land and sacred burial sites. The security company for the security agency for the company that's building this pipeline sicked dogs and maced beat these protesters, and the footage is caught by Democracy Now!, which is very, very disturbing, reminiscent of some of the footage in Birmingham in the 1960s of dogs being sicked on African-American protesters. And yet it was reported as though the protesters were the aggressors, when that's clearly not the case, as indicated in the video, reminiscent of some of the spin that you often hear when you see police videos in which somebody is accused of being the aggressor when in fact they are the victim.
Right. I mean, it. I agree with you. The video, which we'll put up in a link, is heartrending in the sense of having, you know, people on one side of a fence looking over at these bulldozers that are plowing through the prairie. I mean, it's just, you know, ripping the prairie up. But ultimately being, you know, these dogs, which the whole thing is so poignantly iconic, right? I mean, here we are going to mess around with the Indians one more time, right, and do them a disservice with these dogs that, as you say, can only remind you of Bull Connor in Birmingham, Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. It's a horrible thing. And I guess the question is whether or not, I mean, so those are the facts on the ground. I guess the other interesting fact that has happened is that the Indians, along with they have a court case. They've sued various people to stop this, mostly the Army Corps of Engineers, I think, because they said the Army Corps of Engineers did not adequately take into account the comments of the tribes, right? So that gets into something arcane that I can't really speak for. But it turns out that the judge issued at least a partial injunction to stop construction of the pipeline, right?
Did you see that? Yes. It's a very complicated legal situation. But what happened was that at the day after the protest, the Standing Rock Sioux tribe filed another injunction trying to stop the construction or the destruction of the sacred land, and the federal judge involved, the U.S. Judge James Boasberg, blocked construction on land that he said was under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, but he ruled that the land on which the sacred burial sites was located was private property beyond the jurisdiction of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, so he refused to issue an injunction stopping that construction. However, there is still scheduled to be, I believe on September the 9th, there's scheduled to be a preliminary injunction ruling where he will decide whether or not to enjoin any sort of construction until the lawsuit between the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is resolved.
Wow. And so, of course, we're recording this on September 8th, and people who listen to this may be old news, but certainly you should be paying attention to what this federal judge decides for the entire length of the pipeline, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really a big deal.
It is also very interesting that the judge himself was appointed by President Obama, and as we know, there are numerous online petitions urging President Obama to sort of intervene and to the extent that he legally can, pull all the permitting that's allowing this company, which I believe is Energy Transfer is the name of the company, which is allowing this company to sort of destroy in the name of building this pipeline.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole question of from a Climate Hawk's perspective, the pipeline is one more example of unnecessary infrastructure that we should not build, right? So let's stipulate that. That's a reason to oppose this all by itself. The Indians are opposing it based on the fact that it will threaten their soil water supply and that it is through sacred territory that or lands that they consider sacred, and that has not been taken into account yet. So, I mean, it's ongoing.
And I was going to say, you know, one of the things that has come up is this chant, "Water is life," that Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC highlighted in his coverage of these pipeline protests, and the simplicity and the power of that slogan.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very similar to the simplicity and the power of the slogan "Black Lives Matter."
Right.
It sort of evokes the same sort of emotion, and it goes to something that Desi Doyen of the Green News Report pointed out, which is, you know, it's a pushback against the environmental injustice and the environmental racism that's involved here, that if these were, you know, wealthy white individuals, it's highly unlikely that their water would be threatened in this manner by the promoters of this project.
I agree. So I mean, that's the sort of news of the moment, but I guess what I wanted to do was put the image of tractors ripping up the land that presumably belongs to the Indian tribes, or is sacred to the Indian tribes, or is, God knows, sacred to all of us. Contrast that with a bit of news that I heard from New Zealand this past week. It turns out down in the country of New Zealand, which is, of course, way down in the South Pacific, has a long history of, well, the Maori tribe of New Zealand is sort of integral to the whole political structure of New Zealand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they, down there, they think a different way. And it turns out that one of the things they've done is, through an act of their parliament somehow, is to give personhood status to a national park, right? A personhood status to a national park. And what that means is that this thing cannot be owned by anyone. In fact, the government can't own it. Nobody can own it. But that other people can sue on behalf of the person of the, which is the park, in behalf of the park. Did you see anything about that, dear?
Yes, there's a number of great stories about what has happened in New Zealand. It's not just a park, also a river as well.
And yeah, I noticed that neither you or I are trying to pronounce the name of that river. It's way too common.
Whanganui River, I believe it's pronounced.
Okay.
And this was also provided legal protections. And also, you know, this recognition that the land has rights, and that, you know, plants and trees, they have rights too. It's interesting that, you know, we've mentioned before how back in the 1970s, I believe 1972, there was a ruling known as Sierra Club versus Morton, in which in a dissent, Judge William O. Douglas said that he believed that land and plants and trees should have rights, should have the right to sue, should have standing in court, should be recognized as a living thing. And it's very interesting that through the execution of these treaties and through the implementation of the treaties between the government of New Zealand and the Maori tribes, the government of New Zealand seems to recognize this concept, and the government of the United States does not. Also, the website New Matilda, which is sort of like the Australian version of Mother Jones here in the United States, they basically did a great piece contrasting New Zealand's philosophy with the philosophy of Australia, which is, you know, we talk about, you know, similarities between Australian culture and United States culture, and how this sort of this concept of property rights for land and water and trees and air is also a concept that is regarded with skepticism in Australia as it is in the United States.
Well, I guess so just to bring it full circle, it's my understanding, although this is just sort of cultural stuff I've picked up, that somehow the original Indian conception back in, you know, 1491, shall we say, was that there wasn't a concept of land ownership, right? The land was, I mean, you lived on it, but nobody owned it. And it's a peculiarly Western kind of thing with, you know, deeds and specifying, you know, property lines and what you can and cannot do. And I guess this thing in the Dakotas sort of highlights that. I mean, it's a conflict between a sort of a collective sense of ownership and protection versus the specific property rights of individuals, right, that of course hold sway in the United States. But I think that there is it's an interesting thing to at least contemplate the idea that private property is not the only conception we can have of how to manage the earth. I think going, you know, in 200 years, we may have a much different conception of what is involved here.
And again, it goes back to that concept of water is life, and the concept Lawrence O'Donnell talked about, and the protesters talking about, that, you know, people who have this sort of vision of this sort of individualist vision that we can sort of destroy and move around and own, what have you. If they didn't have water, they wouldn't be able to implement that particular vision, now, would they?
Well, but I mean, water is. I mean, can you own a river, right? What is the river? Is the water flowing through it? It's there, then it's gone, right? And I know there's tons of treaties about water rights from rivers, but at another level, you say, okay, this thing is an entity by itself, and needs to be treated differently than something that people own, I guess. And I guess so. To just push the point a little further, the concept that a national park in New Zealand, or the land that this oil company wants to put a thing through, is that is that land should belong to everyone. And I guess it's. Naomi Klein and the climate deniers are all heading in the same direction, in the sense that there's no, you know, looking forward, there have to be changes to the capitalist system, the system of patrimony and property, in order to protect the planet. I mean, it just seems like that's curiously enough, I mean, I think Naomi Orestes has made the point that the deniers are right. It's very hard to maintain the kind of capitalist system we have now if we're really going to protect the planet.
It's ironically enough, you mentioned that the deniers and overlapping with Naomi Klein on the issue of you know, concepts of capitalism. That was one of Rush Limbaugh's talking points all the time, that you would have to essentially rethink capitalism if you wanted to address this issue, and obviously he wasn't terribly interested in doing that.
Well, exactly, and I'm sure there's lots of pushback, but I mean, as far as I guess even within a capitalist system, corporations have personhood rights. So it's not outside the bounds of our legal system to understand that something that is not a living, breathing, conscious human being can have personhood rights because we have corporations. I dare say, just as a toss-off, there are many political people who are pushing for personhood amendments for unborn fetuses, right? Or whatever you think of that. Still in all, this language floats around within the system, and I think it's fair to say that, you know, the Mississippi River ought to be considered a person that cannot be, that has rights and cannot be messed with. It's just, I don't know. I suppose if Rush Limbaugh ever listens to our podcast, he'd be very upset with us.
Definitely.
So I don't know, DR. The whole idea that we should that there are more ways to think of the world than along strictly lines of individual possession is something that that I hope comes back around as a conversation in the future.
Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can.
Oh, there you go. I mean, that's what. Yeah, I mean, you can so easily descend into sort of socialism, communism. We're all going to share the land. I guess that's not what I'm saying. I mean, I think it's a new conception about the earth as an entity that has some kind of standing in our discussions. I guess I'll leave it there, DR. It's too deep. It's too deep for my, for such a simple man. Isn't that the line you would quote to me? The questions run too deep. Anyway, DR, we'll put up some links to some of this stuff at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.net/blog. Please leave us a comment. Tell us who you think ought to be a person. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes. So, DR, we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. See you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.